Thank you. My task is going to be to explain to you why we need one of these. You might say, actually, I'm doing quite fine, you know, wherever we are. And in some way or other, you are actually advancing the cause of healthcare in some way. And in order to explain that, let me start by going to why we are here in a university. Now, it's really a privilege for me to speak to such a diverse group of people. You know, there are mathematicians, chemists, many of whom I've never met before. So why should we do this? I don't expect you to read this. This is on the website. This is our Vice Chancellor articulating the university's strategy. And the first on the list is excellence in research and scholarship. I think if you don't have that, it's very difficult to do any of the other things on the list. And that's what we're all here for. We should be purveyors of excellence in these particular areas. But what I'm going to suggest to you is that some of the ways in which we have organized ourselves in universities, and we are not alone in that, it's the same everywhere, does not lend itself to modern health research. First, we need to deliver high quality education to students who are coming in different subjects. That's our core business. And therefore, students are right at the heart of what we do. And how do we do that? In departments. So university is organized into departments, and most people will recognize, you know, if you say chemistry, you expect to be taught in chemistry there by people who are experts in chemistry and so on. And ditto for healthcare. So in the medical school, again, we teach medical students, and you have people who teach different aspects of biomedical research or biomedicine or health research. And in addition, now universities over the years started creating specialist institutes and centers, and these were addressing particular problems. But by and large, you'll still recognize in every university big departments that teach particular subjects. Now, most of these departments still probably can do some good research, you know, especially if you can manage using a particular technique your problem is so very well focused that you do not need to interact with many other disciplines. But I'm going to argue that in order to be competitive and be really excellent and world-class in biomedical research or health related, you cannot avoid having to cross disciplines and speak to people from across other disciplines, and that you cannot do from within one department. Now, to understand this, we need to go back in time a little bit. If you go back 200 or 300 years ago, you had some fantastic scientific discoveries in medicine. Let's say the discovery of penicillin, you know, a huge revolutionary discovery. One man, a serendipitous discovery, that's all it took. And he knew every method that he needed in order to conduct his research. And when you look at 1953, discovery of DNA, two individuals, they did it all. You know, and they conceptualized it. They had most of the methods within their armamentarium. But look at a recent paper this year of the genetics of multiple sclerosis. I stopped counting after about 100. And amongst them, there are people I know, engineers and mathematicians and so on. So this is how the top end of biomedical research has changed beyond all recognition. Now, it's actually fairly easy to find out what are the big research questions. In fact, many of the health research funders have done it for us. Now, I've actually poached these from Wellcome's website. And actually, if you look at many of the other major funding bodies, they will actually articulate many of these very same themes. So we know what are the big challenges, by and large. And let's take one for example. Let's say you want to you're doing work that could potentially lead to a new treatment in, say, cancer. You've got a target, you've identified it, you've got a proof of principle. What happens next? At the moment, what happens is you just publish it and hope somebody else picks it up and produces something out of it, and it comes to practice in some shape or form by someone somewhere. Trouble is, that's left to a lot of chance. I'm also a practicing diabetologist. In my discipline, we use a particular glycated protein to tell us how good someone's diabetes control is. Now, that particular technology was discovered and very well characterized, about 20 years before it first was applied in healthcare. So that is a very long time before things ultimately reach the market. And why is that? For a start, this is the sort of pathway such discoveries have to go through. If it's a drug, for example, so you start with the bench preclinical studies, characterize the molecules, and then there are a lot of proof of concept studies, and then you go through a very long, tedious program. This phase, this bit alone, the clinical testing, runs to about 10 to 15 years, and it involves lots of different people working in different organizations. And one of the reasons for this is that a whole process has become safer, but at a cost. This is Edward Jenner inoculating some hapless young chap against cowpox, smallpox. He didn't have any forms to fill. It was very straightforward. Now, today, and you could argue, actually, he did a lot of good, you know. But today, the whole process is very, very convoluted, and it is enough to beat the most robust of us, you know. And that's one of the, so you really need specialists in different areas to be able to handle that. It's the, as a one-man band, you know, it becomes too difficult to handle. So therefore, one of the things we have to do, we've started with students at first at the center when we were talking about education. What I would put to you is that when you're talking about research, we must start with the end in mind, which is that it's actually ultimately you want to get it to improve patient care. And then you have to work across disciplines and across the departments as we are organized in Warwick, or for that matter, in all of the universities. Now, that is where the science and technology, GPP, comes in. So we are trying to attempt to cross departmental barriers when it comes to organizing ourselves around particular health challenges. And we did a little bit of this today, but we'll be doing more later on as we go develop further. It's not enough to organize ourselves within this university because the whole pathway of taking basic research right through to healthcare delivery involves several other steps, and the whole process could falter at any stage. And this is Cooksey, who analyzed this and spotted two particular gaps in the translation process. The first is taking prototypes through to developing an actual product. And here, you need links with the industry. So if you've got a new diagnostic or a new potential drug, it is very unlikely that we in the university will develop that drug completely in the university. You need external partners. And the same with translating something that has been developed and tested into implementation and evaluation. You cannot do that sitting here. You need to interface with the NHS in this case. And this is where I think our NHS partners have become very important collaborators. Now, I think there's a lot talked about, which bit is more competitive and more important. Is it universities, institutes, research institutes with a clear focus, or industry? What I would point out is that actually we need to be collaborating with all of them, and you cannot afford to do otherwise. This is a picture of the Francis Crick Institute in London. It's huge. It'll suck in all the best talent from all the universities and everywhere. And we should not be seeing them as a competitor. They should be we should have links with them and collaborate with them. And we've got somebody here from Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine with whom we are doing exactly that in one particular focus area. We can't forget the NIHR is a huge funder, and it's also that's where health research, applied health research, gets funded. And that's why we need to collaborate with the NHS. Now, this particular picture is from a factory, not particularly a health-related industry, perhaps, but it sort of gives you an idea. That's about industrialized processes for developing new concepts. That's fine once you know where you want to go. You know, it's a thoroughly, very closely managed thing. But one advantage we have in our university is blue sky thinking. You know, you have people here, you know, not actually constrained by any such. You can sit, think, not just think beautiful thoughts. You've also got excellent scientists to help develop and test that. And that's something we have to use better. So the vision for the science and technology GPP, this is what we've articulated, which is to focus our physical and intellectual capital to start creating powerful cross-disciplinary programs. Some of you already do that. to some extent, but I think this will stretch the boundaries of even those who are already started doing that, and ultimately with the hope of getting it to benefit patients. So we had to start from somewhere, and to get where we are going, I would have to say we wouldn't start from where we are now, you know. But we've got to start somewhere, so we've actually set out some vertical themes. The first one is largely because that's what all research councils and others are saying that is a major theme for them, and actually you can badge a lot of what you're doing underneath that. Early diagnosis and treatment is something which is very close to the heart of industry. That's what they're wanting, and we do want to step up our industrial partnerships, so that's one of the reasons why we've got that theme. And the last one, charities, that's what a lot of charities spend money on, and I think we can take our talents to actually try and improve healthcare in very resource-poor settings, where a little bit goes a very long way. And this is a little bit about how our GPP works. We have lots of people are helping us. We need a lot of help, I think. And what are we going to do? We have started with a few activities, and I think this is just a start. I don't want to give our Pro Vice Chancellor palpitations by mentioning some of the things that will cost lots of money, but all I would say is that put a marker down and say we are ambitious, and we're actually coming up with some very ambitious plans, and I think we will work them up well, and hopefully that should help in this whole agenda which I've mentioned. But today it's an ideas cafe, and that means we are looking forward to ideas from you, and I have been asked to pose one or two questions by this. What would you like to see this GPP do for you? And if you can actually scribble those down in those posters, that'll be great. I think this one is less, are there any major omissions in what you're doing? Because most of you will not know the full breadth anyway. But if you have any comments on that, if there's something you feel we should be doing, please feel free to write it down over there. Thank you.